And we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio, solid conservative, just plain right, making it cool to be a conservative. I got a caller who held on during the breaks. Let me honor his time. Is that Jeff? Jeff from Indiana. How you doing, brother?
Oh, trying to stay dry right now.
Good luck with that. I think the entire listening area is wet right now, is what I see.
It was wet when I left home. It's wet down here. It hadn't quit yet.
Well, at least it's consistent for you, so there's that.
Yes, it is.
What's going on, brother?
Hey, what you're seeing in Russia doing right now is a prelude to what's going to happen to us. I remember when the Soviet Union collapsed and everything. You remember seeing all the pictures of the ships and submarines resting in the harbors? And
oh, yeah.
I mean, and, you know, basically they went bankrupt trying to keep up with us. And the way we're going now, this country is already bankrupt. We just got creditors as crazy enough to keep funneling money into us, I guess.
Well, they've got a printing press that runs on overtime right now that prints money at just makes the drop of a hat.
Yeah. So when this country collapses economically, what do you think is going to happen to our military? And furthermore, the worst part about it is the Chinese, the Russians, the Koreans, the North Koreans. What do you think is going to happen in that part of the world when we can no longer project our strength? I mean, I'm not afraid of us getting invaded by anybody because we have the nukes, same as what happened to the Soviet Union. I mean, the Russians still had the nukes. Nobody was going to touch them. But they probably, at the time of the collapse, they probably couldn't have whooped Belgium.
No. No, I doubt it. And I'm not sure they can now either. But, you know, Jeff, your point's well taken, man. I mean, if we keep running down the roads of these policies, and, oh, by the way, this fiscal policy that we're into, the spend ad nauseum, and Biden even submitted a defense budget that was lower than even a bipartisan Congress could abide by, and so yeah, it's something's got to change. We've got to. I look back on the Reagan era, and I know you know I've said on the show before. You've heard me say it. It took a Carter to bring us a Reagan. I am just praying that we're going to wind up coming out of this Biden era, sort of like we came into Reagan after Carter. I am just praying we have a one termer and we put somebody in there who brings us back to Reagan's days.
Yeah, but we're going to have politicians that will stand up to our addiction to capital as far as money is wise. Do you see it going? I mean, we keep spending money that we don't have, and we haven't even paid back any of the loans, basically. When do you see that turning around that it would actually stop? You know, the only time I see it stopping is when we completely collapse. And then they'll be going, oh, my, what did we do?
It's going to take a change out of the old guard right now to make that happen. We have, you know, the Freedom Caucus is very fiscally minded, very fiscally conservative. I got a text from a guy last night who's affiliated with one of the more conservative groups in D.C., and he said, if some of your state lawmakers would please write a letter to Shelby and tell him to quit siding with the Democrats on this spending bill, we'd be a whole lot better off. And I agree with him. McConnell and Shelby, they've gotten so numb to the idea of spending that they don't even track it anymore. They just go and do. Spending for them is just a leverage for the next thing they want on the next bill.
Well, it's going to have to be a change of the mindset of the people who are the takers instead of the givers. Long as you're on the take, you're not going to change everything. You know, you're going to have to start weaning off now because it's going to be too late eventually, and then it will be a civil war like you've never seen, because it'll be the haves that prepared for this and the have-nots, and it's going to be a bloody war.
Well, I hope we never get to the point of another civil war, but I do know this: Biden better wake up, because yesterday he stood on the White House lawn, you know, having his drag queen event, and announced that his economic policies were working and that things were going great. At the same time, stories are running talking about eggs are 47% more expensive than they were last year. Hey, listen, Jeff, I got another caller holding the line, man. I got to run to it, all right? All right, buddy, see you. Line five, is that Kareem? Yeah, Kareem from Huntsville. How you doing, man? I hadn't seen you in a while.
Hey, how you doing, Phil?
I'm good, buddy. How you been doing?
I'm fine. I am fine. But I just have a little problem with the last thing you said about the Kurds and outstanding with them, of course, because it was Donald Trump that pulled us out of Syria and left the Kurds as far as I think he left them to Turkey. And Turkey was over there killing them indiscriminately after we pulled out of Syria. So why would you contribute that to Joe Biden?
Oh, no, no, no.
They didn't want to be our friend now after we left.
No, no, you misunderstood. I'm not denying the fact that Trump pulled back. Now, he didn't pull completely out of Syria. He listened to his generals, and he kept a contingent there. But it's far smaller now than it used to be. But I'll say this. The Kurds didn't stop being our allies. We just didn't have anybody there. But we have troops there now, and they're in harm's way if Turkey invades. And truly, who is our most staunch ally in that region is going to wind up being the Kurds. So it's a difficult spot to be in.
If they want to help us, I don't know. I think that's what they probably have a problem with now, because we left them. We ran. We cut ties with them and left them there to die.
Well, and unfortunately, we've done that more than once. You know, right after the first Gulf War, there was talk about what would happen to the Kurds if we pulled out, and we didn't have any follow-up under the first Bush administration. And the Kurds got whole villages of Kurds got gassed by the Saddam Hussein regime. So I ain't arguing with you on this one, man. I agree. We got to quit bailing on our allies. How about that?
All right. Absolutely.
Kareem, did you and I disagree?
I agree with you.
I think we disagreed on something. Is this a sign of the end times? What is happening?
I was about to call you yesterday because Rocky III is Club Elaine. Now, Rocky IV, that is Ivan Drago.
Yes, you're right.
And I'm talking about, yes, absolutely. Trust me, I'm a complete movie buff. I got every last one of them. I got them in VHS, Blu-ray, and DVD.
Oh, all right, man. We appreciate you. You have a good one. All right, we'll see you.
Yep.
Wow. Boomer. Kareem and I disagreed on something.
That's awesome.
I don't know how to take this. Does that mean like a sign of the end times? What's happening right now?
I don't know. I mean, it is raining outside, but I mean I was chatting with him earlier and I was like, all right. I mean, he's always nice on the phone.
Oh, he's great.
He's great.
We disagree.
I love it when he calls him.
Yeah, no doubt. All right. And JT from Lacey Springs just texted in and said, the crowd goes wild. Phil and Kareem agree. Hit the applause button, Boomer. Woohoo! There it is. All right, the music's playing. That means I'm up against a break. You guys, stay tuned. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. We'll be right back. And we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio, solid conservative, just plain right. Show covers all of North Alabama. I'm talking about way down south of Birmingham, up north of Huntsville, Tuscaloosa, back over to Gadsden, parts of Georgia, Tennessee, and Mississippi thrown in just for good measure. I got somebody holding on the line. Is that Sparky? Sparky from Harvest. How you doing, brother?
I'm awesome. Great show, you and Boomer.
Thank you, man.
Hey, on the topic of leaving allies hanging, we did it at the end of the first Gulf War.
Yeah,
I remember waking up in a Iraqi conscript had made it through our camp. We were in disarray up in Iraq, and this guy just walked in holding his hands up, and I steered him toward a lieutenant who was half asleep in a Humvee at dawn's early light. Anyway, there's the nicest guy. He didn't speak any English, and we didn't speak whatever his dialect was, but he knew some French, and one of the soldiers on the ground spoke some French, so he talked to him. He was a conscripted shop owner who'd been grabbed up 3 weeks earlier and given uniforms and a rifle and zero training.
Wow.
And sent forward to die. And he was a nice fella, and last I flew away and saw him sitting on the tailgate of a vehicle drinking a Fanta soda and eating some ho-hos and ding-dongs and just, you know, was happy he was alive. He was in the hands of some good people. And I learned later that most of those guys who had either been captured or given themselves up were killed and or treated very cruelly by the Saddam regime after we pulled out. We didn't finish the job at the end of the first Gulf War, and there's things we could have done to save thousands of good Iraqi men who probably perished because of how we kind of walked out of there and took our victory lap, right?
Yeah.
We didn't really finish what a lot of us thought we were there to do.
Well, I totally agree. I mean, we degraded their military capabilities, but we did not do anything with regards to their ideological capabilities. And the Kurds, as to Kareem's point earlier, the Kurds, literally, we abandoned the Kurds who we had, you know, allied with on the ground, and that's why we had to go back in and establish the no-fly zone over Kurdistan area of northern Iraq, because they were constantly getting persecuted and shelled and attacked by the Iraqis.
Right.
As always,
I don't know.
Huh? Go ahead.
Yeah, go ahead. I'm amazed that successful military operations can turn into politics as usual, and that everything just falls into what's convenient for the politics of the moment. And that, you know, you could name more stories of that. I'm sure that I could. But I don't know. We need leadership so badly at this point in the military, and we need a commander in chief who knows what day it is and what his own name is. I think that would be helpful. That's my wish, Santa, if you're listening. You know, I've had lumps of coal every year. We need a commander in chief who doesn't need a wet nurse.
Wow. Well, all right. Well said. I don't know that I can even add to that. But, hey, Sparky, appreciate you, man, as always. And, again, thanks for your service.
No, you too, Joe.
All right,
Thank you.
Wow. All right. It's funny because the text lines kind of got quiet as we were doing that whole section there on a walk in Biden's world. But they've livened up again, and then the call started coming in too.
Yeah,
so.
they livened up right after Kareem jumped in. Like even Brian from Huntsville said.
Brian called in. What did he say?
Yeah, he said, "Man, I just wanted to tell Kareem I agree with him and Merry Christmas." So Brian from Huntsville said that to you, Kareem. Just wanted you to know that.
All right. Well, there it is. and love broke out on Right Side Radio. all right. Listen, I'm gonna move to the next part of the Triple Dipper, knowing full well that at top of the hour we're moving over to the Grand Council. Let's see how far I can get with this. So the second dipper of the day is called A Fine Line Between Hardcore and Stupid. Now, we used to have that saying in the military. I don't know if anybody else used it. Maybe it was just my running buddies. I don't know. But there's a fine line between hardcore and stupid. And by that, what I mean is sometimes, like, you know, jumping out of an airplane, that's, you know, or you know, rappelling off a cliff. Those things are hardcore. You want to do something a little more extreme. You want to do something kind of, you're going to go in there and you're going to stay the route and you're going to stay on task and you're going to get the mission done. You're hardcore. Every once in a while, you find that person who is known to not necessarily work smarter, just to work harder. There's a fine line between hardcore and stupid. That being said, I wrote this section's title because of a couple of stories that I've got and, oh, by the way, something in the law that is really there to benefit law enforcement that has occasionally been abused. Civil asset forfeiture, and I'll get to that in a moment. I mean, here's my fine line between hardcore and stupid piece. First story I've got came out just a few weeks ago. Did you hear about this down in Valley, Alabama, down there in Lee County near Auburn? Authorities in Valley, Alabama arrested an 82-year-old woman for failing to pay her trash bills. I kid you not. Story on CBS News. This is a national story. Martha Minifield was arrested and released on bond in November 27th by the Valley Police Chief Mike Reynolds, by the Valley Police, said Chief Mike Reynolds in a statement. In August, Minifield had been issued a citation for non-payment of trash services for the months of June, July, and August. And then they issued a warrant for her arrest. And Minifield, who basically says, we can't use discretion, we have to arrest. I got news. Fellas, there's a fine line between hardcore and stupid. And the fact that you cuffed an 82-year-old woman and took her in for not paying a trash bill. And by the way, I've seen a picture of her house. She obviously has no money. So, I don't know. maybe you pass the hat at the police station and you go in and pay the bill so the court will leave her alone. Because I've paid my trash bill before. It's usually not that much. What are we talking? 20, 30 bucks a month tops? Well, the reality is there's a fine line between hardcore and stupid. Please, Mr. Police Chief, don't tell us you didn't have any choice, because you did. Because you have discretion. And oh, by the way, you had discretion in how to handle it. But the next story I've got came out yesterday, also on AL.com. A municipal judge in Alabama found two women guilty on all charges Tuesday in a case that started when they were caught feeding and trapping cats on public property near the courthouse. I kid you not. Wetumpka Municipal Judge Jeff Courtney sentenced 61-year-old Mary Alston and 85-year-old Beverly Roberts to 2 years of unsupervised probation and $50 fines plus court costs for each charge, and he added a suspended sentence of 10 days in jail for both women because they kept feeding wild cats near the courthouse. Now, let me say this. The women have been told to stop. They have been asked not to because more cats kept coming. It was becoming a nuisance. They claim that they are animal rights, I don't want to call them activists, but bottom line is they're very active in animal rights issues. And they were catching these cats and having them spayed and neutered so they wouldn't keep breeding. Okay, that's your thing. But then they're re-releasing them by the courthouse and then coming back and feeding them every day. Then more cats would show up. Anyway, but they get arrested. Not only did they get arrested, they got cuffed. And then they got taken to court. Folks, at one point in the body cam video, you can hear one of the ladies saying, "Y'all have three cop cars here because I'm feeding cats? Y'all are unbelievable," she said. "You're wasting city gas coming out here." And I got to tell you, despite the fact that I know she'd been warned and she was probably obnoxious, I agree. And one of the women was 85 years old. I mean, for the love, fellas, Wetumpka, what are you doing? They're feeding cats. How about this? Call your animal control office and have the cats removed. And maybe then they won't be there feeding them anymore. Okay, now, let me just caveat everything I just said by saying I recognize those are anomalies. The men and women in blue, we love you on this show. We talk about it all the time. What I hate seeing, though, is when someone takes their job and goes from being hardcore to stupid. And where it used to happen a lot is in a thing called, I say a lot, where it used to happen too often was in a thing we call civil asset forfeiture. What that basically is the fancy name given to cash and items that are seized because of criminal activity. Now, here's the thing. When I was in the state Senate, I used to go out on task force raids with my local drug task force. I would show up. They'd have a roundup, and I'd show up with them, and we'd serve warrants half a day or more. And it was an honor to go out there with them. It wasn't just a ride along. I was armed. I was temporarily deputized, wore a vest, and we went out. And it was pretty eye-opening. That being said, there were times when that task force was able to maintain its budget because of what it seized in some of those raids, because drug dealers always work in cash, you know? And so you'd find mounds of cash. I remember one time they actually had an entire house that wound up being forfeited, and when the person was convicted, they were able to sell the house and the proceeds went to fund the drug task force. I get it. I think that makes sense. I also look at one time when I was in Mobile years ago. I went to college at University of South Alabama. I'm driving through Spring Hill region of Mobile, and coming up down, I saw a white Mercedes, and it had red and blue lights on top of it. I thought, what is going on? And then as it got closer, I saw that it had the City of Mobile seal on the door, and big letters on the back door, it said, "This car was seized from drug traffickers who were recently convicted of a crime." And they were driving it. It was a billboard, basically, for the police office, or police department. Civil asset forfeiture is not always bad. But unfortunately, Alabama's laws were so lax on it that there were times when it became abusive. So we reformed the law in 2021, I believe. Yes, 2021. Let me tell you, we worked on that for several years. It was still going when I was in office. But I mean, here's the thing. Law enforcement and district attorneys were saying, please don't change the law. But yet, there were times when you had things happening like what was going on down in Inslee, when a guy who runs a business called Far Computers in 2017, Frank Rinelli, He showed up at work one day, according to the story here from AL.com. He showed up at work one day, was opening his store, and all of a sudden he had 20 officers from Homewood and Mountain Brook who were surrounding his store. He said some were wearing flak jackets and carrying assault rifles, and they seized every computer in his store, 130 computers, saying that they had gotten a tip that they had been part of previous crimes and that he was trafficking in stolen computers. He was never convicted. It never happened. And he never got the computers back. Okay, when you're seizing property from an innocent civilian who had nothing to do with the crimes that you initially thought were there, the property has to come back. When you're seizing money during a traffic stop and you don't give it back, even though the traffic stop didn't result in a criminal conviction, that's wrong. We saw that happening, by the way. What was the city here? I'm looking at it right now. It was, Castleberry? Castleberry. This was the mecca of abuse of civil asset forfeiture. Little town of Castleberry, Alabama, down in South Alabama. In one particular case, a guy named Trey Crozier was driving his Mercury Sable through Castleberry, and the officers pulled him over, and they basically seized $1,750 that he had with him. He was never charged with a crime. He was much less convicted. He never got his money back. And so the end result of this is Castleberry was actually a small town that was in decline, didn't even have a police force, and the police chief there, who was hired by the mayor, decided that the best way they could handle this was to become a traffic stop nightmare for people who were just passing through. And they seized stuff left and right, and they funded the city with it. Civil asset forfeiture should not occur if you're not convicted of a crime. When we get back from this break, I'm going to tell you what happened in 2021 that began to mitigate some of that and bring it back to a place of hardcore but not stupid. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Civil asset forfeiture, a fine line between hardcore and stupid. We'll be right back. And we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Solid conservative, just plain right. Hey, by the way, let me tell you guys, ZLA Solutions, those folks have been with us since this show began, and they are amazing at what they do, doing a great job at putting jobs and people back together and just providing general business solutions all around to their clients all over, really way outside. I mean, they're all over the nation right now, but they started right here in North Alabama. And they've got, if you're looking for a job, let me just tell you, take a look at their website, ZLAUSA.com. They've got great jobs posted right now all over the northern part of our state, big name employers, good pay, a lot of them with benefits. But at the same time, if you are an employer looking to fill out the ranks of your workforce. Well, ZLA Solutions, that's their bread and butter, man. They will provide you with the onesies or twosies, special niche skills, or for that matter, a whole shift of people. You tell them what you need. They can do the recruiting, the background checks, the drug testing, blue collar, white collar, no collar, it don't matter. Yeah, that's ZLA Solutions. And if you would, tell them you heard about it on Right Side Radio. Just go to ZLAUSA.com, start that relationship with them, and they will be there for you. All right, listen, I'm going back into this section on civil asset forfeiture. I had several texts here. Brian from Huntsville texted in. Civil assets and forfeiture on the old ladies feeding cats. How far is a bag of Meow Mix going to help? I don't know. Donna from Coleman. Why don't they just go down to the southern border? Feral cats are better than feral humans. Wow, Donna, wow. Okay, there's that. So several others that I'll try to get to in a little bit. Let me tell you, so here's the deal. Civil asset forfeiture, I am okay with it if you can prove the crime. In other words, if the crime existed or the assets are defaulted, meaning nobody showed up to claim them, then I get it. Default, there has to be a period of time when default has occurred. There has to also, by the way, be a conviction. If someone says, that's my stuff, I want it back. Well, you don't want to, if you find a pile of cash in a drug trafficker's house, should you give them back the fruits of their illegal activity? And I don't think so. But if it turns out that that's really just someone who is, you know, worried about banks, and their bank is their mattress, and they're storing their money there, and there's no conviction, well, then those should not be something that is retained by the government officials, the police departments, the task forces, whoever. So Heritage.org, Heritage Foundation, wrote a piece in February of 2019 talking about the fact that we finally reformed Alabama's laws, or we're taking steps to change Alabama's laws. It says officials across Alabama will now have to document crucial data on civil forfeiture. So they have to now have a database that shows where it went. Transparency is important. When you've got towns like Castleberry that are abusing the system, when you've got people like down in Valley that forget their place in life and they arrest 82-year-old women for not paying their trash bill, you look at it and go, okay, wait a minute. And so right now, the way it works is Alabama District Attorney's offices have to track a wide range of all this data, according to a story here from Heritage, dated 2019, the date and location of the seizures, whether a seizure is related to a highway interdiction or not, which direction the car was traveling even, the underlying criminal offense that justified the seizure, whether the property owners were represented by an attorney or they were pro se, and the final disposition of any case. All of this is going to be compiled and has to be reported annually and posted, I believe, on a website. But that being said, came back in 2021, and they actually passed a new law. This is after I left the legislature. I was there for the setting up of the database piece, but the new legislature finally passed an amendment that literally says that you cannot seize amounts less than $250. You cannot seize cars valued at under $5,000. And oh, by the way, there has to be a criminal conviction for you to be able to maintain possession. It talks about several stats here. This is an article from Forbes, by the way. It says, over the past 2 years, Alabama agencies opened 2,158 forfeiture cases, seizing $12.7 million in cash, 477 cars, but the owners rarely recovered what was taken from them. During that same period, law enforcement returned just a mere 38 of those cars, along with only $139,000 in cash. And it says that winning a civil asset forfeiture case in Alabama was so difficult that many owners didn't even bother to hire an attorney to fight back. I get it. But Senate Bill 210 did pass. They did modify what too often went from being hardcore to stupid. And they brought it back to a realm that makes more sense and, in my opinion, leaves you with some rights so that if your property is seized because of an allegation or a reasonable belief, you have a chance to get it back. All right, there's that. Fine line between hardcore and stupid. Does not mean we don't love our law enforcement, because we certainly do. All right, folks, Phil Williams, Right Side Radio, coming right back with the Grand Council with Jeff Poore and Dale Jackson. Y'all stay tuned. We'll be right back. Right Side ruffians out there.